Hey everyone, what's up?
Hey guys, it's Lily.
And it's Carmen, and welcome to the Murder
Murder
Show.
Show.
I am so excited for the case that I have for you today. I think I've told Lily about it before. I
Oh, well,
definitely
I'm
have.
acting surprised.
Yeah, well,
I don't
okay,
know what it
so
is yet. I don't know what it is yet.
yeah, no, but okay, this is my hometown story, okay?
Okay.
Do you have any ideas?
It's either what happened to the USD
Oh, no, I didn't
professor's
even.
daughter. Is it not
I
that
don't even
one?
know about that.
Yeah, she has a memorial in the back of Camino because she was murdered by that serial killer.
No, I don't even know about that.
Oh shit. Yeah, dude,
Next
you
one.
told
Next story.
me. You
Am
told me
I
that.
the one that's told you?
Yes.
I
Who
don't
else
think
would
so.
tell me that?
I don't think I know about that. Maybe I do, but I blocked it out of my memory. I don't know. All I know is about the Blue Nun and Founders. I don't know anything about the memorial in Back of
No,
Camino.
there was this girl that there was a serial killer in San Diego, and she like thought she was gonna get killed by him for some reason. She was like super paranoid.
I know the story.
And it was the
Yes.
professor's daughter at
Yes.
USD.
Yes, and My Favorite Murder has covered this story.
They covered that story, but I think it's the same
Yes.
serial killer. I'm
It's
not
the
sure, but
Claremont killer.
it's the Claremont killer, and it was
Yes.
a USD professor's daughter.
Okay, I guess I didn't know that.
You
That it was
I
the
think you or your mom. Your mom told me about this memorial, and I was
It
sitting with you and
was
your
probably
mom.
my mom. Yeah, it was probably
Yeah.
my
I
mom.
was like sitting with you and your mom, and your mom told
Oh my
us.
God. Why did I forget that? Jeez, okay, well, next story, we'll do that one.
Okay.
No, this one I've told you about, but maybe not so much in detail. Like, this is the case that truly changed my life and like changed the directory of my life and like my entire neighborhood and everything. And I wouldn't be into true crime probably without this case. And I was thinking a lot when I was like writing about this. I really don't want to exploit this case because like I think there has been other people that have, but we can have a conversation about that. I always think it's really interesting to kind of like discuss about the role of a true crime like media person and like content creator. But my point of this is not to exploit this story, but is more just to kind of share the story of the trauma that my area went through. And I think it's an important story because it also says a lot about like the police system and the California legal system and everything. So that's really what the point is, okay?
Okay.
So a lot of my sources are just the local news sources from San Diego. Also, there was a Dateline episode about this later called Vanished, and that is pretty much it, to be honest. Okay. So I'm going to try to tell the story from my perspective as the events unfolded at first, just so you can kind of get an idea of how it was experienced by the whole community and what it looked like through my eyes, like learning about through everything.
Okay.
And then I'll kind of give like a more detailed chronological timeline later, now that we have like more details about the investigation with the released police reports and everything now. Okay, so February 26, 2010. Okay. I had just turned 13 years old 2 days before on the 24th. And at this time in my life, I was really, really deep into my dance life. I was doing classical ballet, and every single day I would be at the same dance studio with the same girls. And my dance studio was in Carmel Mountain Ranch area, which is kind of like in between Poway, Rancho Bernardo,
It's
Rancho
North County,
Panecillos.
San Diego.
Yeah,
And
North
I
County,
don't know
San
if you guys
Diego.
know this, but like Carmen and her sister were both are really good dancers. Her sister even was like in the San Francisco Ballet, right?
Yeah,
So like it was a really big part of their lives growing up, just for
Yeah.
anyone that didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh my God, I feel so hyped up right now. But yeah, and so I was like going every single day, and like this particular studio, like you would see the same people every single day, and you got really close to all the girls there because this is the type of like, especially like 13, 14, 15, like you're starting to get very serious about that. And everyone in dance kind of knows. So I was really close to all the girls there. And one day I walk into my studio and we had this like board up where you would usually see like the announcements. And that day there's just one face and it's on a missing poster on the board. And this missing poster is everywhere in my dance studio. And you can kind of tell there's like a little bit of buzz going on and all the moms are looking really stressed. Yes, the dance mom sitting around is very true and accurate. But today they're kind of just talking and whispering. And so what I found out had happened is that one of the students at nearby Poway High School had disappeared that day. And it was 17-year-old Chelsea King. Actually, sorry, the day before she had disappeared. And it's 17-year-old Chelsea King.
And like to put this in, like my family now lives like across the street from Poway High. So like this is somewhere we go.
A lot. This
Yeah.
area, like, you can
Poway
describe
is one
it
of the
like,
best school districts in the country too.
yeah.
Like this is a family suburban area where bad stuff just doesn't
Absolutely.
happen.
It's so safe. It's so suburban. It's such a, like, just normie, kind of boring, I would say,
It's so boring.
place.
Like it's fucking
Like,
boring. It's
you
like
know, like,
the greatest thing there is a Chick-fil-A. Like
yeah. I
and
mean, yeah,
that
there's
just
like good
came.
strip malls, and that's kind of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, you can attest to that this area is so safe. Like, this is where people like come to raise their families, pretty much. And the King family had moved from Illinois to Poway in San Diego for this reason, for the schools to raise their kids in
Look
Poway.
up Poway High School. Like, it is one of the best high schools in the country. The school district of Poway
Yeah.
is amazing. So people will move all around California and the country, and people in San Diego, they
Right.
relocate to Poway so they don't have to pay for private school, can send their kids to a
Absolutely.
really good public school. That's why my family moved there, because there's seven
Yeah.
fucking kids and they're like, we cannot afford this.
We can't afford private school for everyone. Yeah, but it's like no one expects anything to happen there. Some of the girls that I was dancing with, they went not my age because I was still in eighth grade, but my sister's age and a couple years above me. They went to Poway High and they knew Chelsea personally, and everyone is just bawling and freaking out, and I don't even know how to process it, and no one knows what's going on. And it was one of the most traumatic moments of my life and really scary, but obviously it's not as traumatic as it was for them and obviously for Chelsea. So a little bit about Chelsea King. Again, she was a student at Poway High. She was a really amazing cross country runner. She did peer counseling. She played in the school symphony. She had this beautiful strawberry blonde red hair and these big sparkling blue eyes. She was truly just beautiful inside out. Like such, she loved serving her community and she had amazing friends. She was inspirational, loving, caring. She loved to write. She loved her family and her community. All of her friends spoke of her quirky sense of humor and her upbeat spirit. Okay, so back to it. So what had happened is that the day before, it was February 25th, Chelsea went for a jog. Again, she was in cross country, so this was so normal for her. She
So
did this
normal.
all the
Like the kids
time.
that did cross country at my school, they would jog every day before school. Like
Absolutely.
every single day they were running.
Yes. This was like after school that like was in the evening, like really normal thing for her to do. And so she went for a jog in the Rancho Bernardo Community Park near Lake Hodges. This area is gorgeous. It's really natural. It kind of saddles like the 15 freeway goes like through there's a bridge that goes over Lake Hodges, and when you cross it, you just get two sides of Lake Hodges and see water, and it's kind of marshy. It's a really nice area. Again, it's extremely suburban, residential, and natural. There's a bunch of running trails, walking trails, everything. So unfortunately, that evening, Chelsea did not return from her jog, and her parents became extremely worried and contacted the police. The search for Chelsea
God, that is
started
such a
that
nightmare.
evening.
That
Yeah,
is such a
it's
nightmare.
yes. Like just not knowing what happened at all.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. The search for her begins immediately that evening and with the police and hundreds of volunteers already. At the community park, police find her car in the parking lot. And inside her car is her cell phone and her iPod inside.
Does she, okay, I don't know, this is like kind of a specific question. Does
Yeah.
she normally run with her iPod on her?
Yeah, when I kind of read that, it was kind of confusing. Again, this is 2010, so if you're running with music, it's your iPod. This phone is probably not an iPhone. So I don't know. Maybe she just wanted to not run with music that day. We really don't know.
Okay. You know? Or maybe she... Okay, keep going.
She could have forgotten her headphones or, you know, it's something like this. It's just one of those really weird details, but it definitely caught my attention too. Okay, so unfortunately at that evening, they didn't find anything else. And so the search continued for days with hundreds of volunteers, helicopters. At one point, the FBI became involved. And on one of the days, searching the shores of Lake Hodges, they come across an item of clothing, which I believe it to be, it was her underwear and a shoe that they believe to be Chelsea's.
That's so scary. Those are like, I just wouldn't want to find her underwear. I feel like that is so bad.
Yeah, it obviously points you to a certain direction. And
like,
yeah, I'm sure.
Because you could think like maybe she fell. Like you could have like a lot of hope if she's just running on a trail, you know? But then once you find that just would change my whole outlook if I was her family.
Right. And so the only good thing of that came from this search is that they have more information. And actually, very, very lucky, there was DNA evidence on this clothing. And I'm just going to reveal already what had happened. Okay. So they find DNA evidence on the underwear and they're able to match it immediately to someone in the system. And it's known sex offender John Albert Gardner III. Okay, so then
they matched DNA. Do they know what kind of, was it touch DNA? Like, do they know what it was?
They did not reveal what type of DNA it was. I don't know if it was touch. I don't know if it was semen. It was not released. However, it is revealed because he eventually admits that she was raped. So it's possible that it was semen DNA. Okay, so 3 days later, which is February 28th, 30-year-old John Albert Gardner III is arrested on charges of rape and murder on the northwest side of Lake Hodges after getting a tip from a witness that they had seen someone matching the description in the area. So what that means is that he is literally walking around the site where he knows Chelsea is. But they haven't found her body,
so how can they charge him with murder?
I think that they probably just made the assumption, or they arrested him on, I guess,
something, and then he got charged for murder later.
Yeah, like they arrested him on maybe kidnapping or just assumption or just questioning. Maybe that wasn't the right terminology that I wrote down. But anyway, so they detain him. But since they detained him around like Hodges, I thought it was so sinister that he's like walking around this area, you know? And he's like, and also, I mean, I guess it's not weird because he lived in this neighborhood that was on the shores of Lake Hodges. But still, like, there's just something, like, gross about that.
Wait, so he was on the sex offender registry.
Yes, he is a known sex offender, which I'll get into later. Okay, so then they still haven't found her body and they're still looking. And so then a couple days later on March 2nd, divers finally find Chelsea's body on the south side of Lake Hodges, about 10 feet from the shore. Later in the autopsy, it was determined that she had been raped and strangled to death. The same day that they had found her body before, there was already a vigil planned for that evening that was going to be wishing for Chelsea's safe return. But on that same day, right before the memorial service was scheduled to start, they had found the body and the sheriff announced it to the family. So quickly it took on the air of a memorial service, and there was hundreds of people there in support, and it was a really sad, sad experience. Very soon, while questioning Gardner, is realized that this possibly could have been avoided due to the fact that Gardner was a repeat sex offender and there should have been more checks on him. And there were several crimes happening in the area and witness reports, and the police were notified of several incidents, and the police never looked into any of these to further their investigation.
Wait, so there were several incidents dealing with Gardner?
Yeah, which I'm going to get into right now to kind of give you the timeline of everything that happens.
Okay.
So let's talk about Gardner and the timeline that leads up to February 2010 and the murder of Chelsea King. So John Albert Gardner III was born in Culver City, California.
Whoa, that's like 10 minutes for me.
Yeah. Oh. His parents divorced, and he frequently relocated around Southern California as a child, living in Los Angeles area, Palm Springs area, and then eventually settling down in San Diego. His mother was a psychiatric nurse, and she put Gardner on psychiatric medication starting at age 6 years old. And when he was 10 years old, he was actually held in a psychiatric hospital for 60 days. As a student, he was labeled...
For what?
It does not say.
So, like, do we think that this is because his mom...
I kind of think that she's diagnosing him on her own.
Right? Because I'm like, how do you know at 6 years old?
I think it's absolutely ridiculous. Unless to put someone on medication.
Can psychiatric medication mean like ADHD medicine or something?
Maybe it could, but it doesn't say. But I still think that,
because
like,
at 6 years old, I do think there are people that get put on ADHD medicine. Like, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but
sure, maybe so it does like help. The medicine. Yeah, I have no idea, but I also think like if anyone's parents are doctors, like, let's say your parent is a doctor, your doctor
is this like
can
Munchausen's
write prescriptions
by proxy,
for you, right?
Vibes.
Yeah, like,
I don't think they're supposed to.
They're not supposed to, but maybe they can. But I also think that if she's, like, diagnosing him, you should always get a second, third opinion. Because you might be biased, or, you know, like, I don't know. I don't think it's right.
Or she fucking knew from the beginning, you know?
Or she knew from the fucking beginning. Or it fucked him up more. I don't know. Like, yeah. We really don't. There's no way to know. And I don't want to blame it on the mom, because this guy is a fucking shithead and it's no one's fault but his, what he does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as a student, he was labeled seriously emotionally disturbed. He graduated from Rim of the World High School in Lake Arrowhead, California in 1997 with a 3.2 grade average.
Wow, he really did go all around.
Yeah, he was all over Southern California, like even those like mountains in Southern California and everything. He was all over, because he also had like family all over, because his parents were divorced. So sometimes he was like with dad, sometimes he was with mom. So he just went everywhere.
Okay.
He was diagnosed with ADHD.
Okay.
So that we know for sure. And he also said that his father was an alcoholic who beat him. When he was a teenager at high school, he was convicted of trespassing on other high schools. And so it was like, it became a thing for him, as we'll see, to like hang around schools, which is so creepy. He would just kind of like walk around them and kind of case them, and it's so fucking creepy. Yeah. After graduating high school, he had moved to San Diego, and he was working at like Big Lots or something. In 2000, 3 years after graduating high school, he was convicted of molesting a 13-year-old female neighbor. So
wait, in what year was that?
This was 2000.
Okay, and that was 3 years after he graduated high school.
Yeah, so he's
21.
He's 20, yeah, 20 or 21 right now. And he's sentenced to 5 years in prison for this, which he serves.
I'm sorry, 5 years? It's a child.
I know. And apparently, like, I didn't put that much detail in here about it, but apparently, like, what he did to her was really aggressive and violent. Like, it wasn't, when they say molest, like, it wasn't, I don't know. Like, sometimes I think molest is too soft as a word.
It's like sugarcoating what happens.
Like, this is a violent thing. You know, and I don't know if molest a lot of the times like insinuates violence.
Yeah.
And so this wasn't just like a cop of feel situation, which is horrible, horrible, horrible. But this was seriously like, it could have gone further in a second, honestly. So I think 5 years is ridiculous. And he completes his parole in 2008, although it was determined that he had violated the terms of his parole 7 times. So he was sentenced to 5 years in prison. He serves that. He gets out of prison in 2005, and then he completes his 3 years of parole in 2008, even though he had violated his parole many, many times. One of the violations was living too close to a school.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and he was also being tracked by the GPS anklet during his parole, and he had totaled 168 parole violations because he had been to several. He lived by a school, but he also would case these schools, so
That's
he
like
wasn't
one a
allowed to be.
week. Dude, that is like
Yes,
more than one a
yes.
week for the 3 years that he was on parole.
It's disgusting. Yes, it's crazy. He would walk around schools. He would like loiter in front of daycare centers.
What the fuck?
Yes, and people knew, or the police
Daycares?
or the
Those are such
system.
little kids. What the
Yes,
fuck?
yes. Like they knew they had these res like all these violations with him, and they still took him off of parole, and they took away the GPS monitoring system. So now he was pretty much
Why
like
even
an
have it on him in
innocent.
the first place?
I know. They weren't doing anything about it.
Why
They literally did nothing
even
about
waste
it.
money and put it on his ankle if you don't give a fuck where he's going anyways?
Yes, I know. It's ridiculous. It's turning a blind eye so much, and
I feel
this
like
is
I'm
like
getting so mad about
really.
this because my little babies all live in San Diego and Poway, and I'm getting
Yeah.
fucking pissed.
No, it's scary. I mean, thank God we know this guy. I'll spoil it all for you. He's in prison, thank God. But like, it just shows you. Well, you know what? I'll get into it, and like, maybe you'll feel better by the end of the story.
Okay.
Okay, hopefully. There are some good things that come out of it, this tragedy. So in 2008, and this is the fall of 2008, he gets the GPS monitoring off of him, and he's finished with parole. So pretty much in the eyes of the law, he's a free and innocent man. Okay. However, things really escalate from here as soon as he's off parole. So let's start going through that timeline.
Okay.
4 months after Gardner finishes his parole, 14-year-old Amber Dubois goes missing on her way to school on February 13th, 2009, in Escondido. As soon as her parents heard from Escondido High that Amber, who was a student with perfect attendance, loved school, did not show up, the family goes straight into panic mode. And they contact police, who immediately start an investigation. They retrace her route to school. They plaster the entire city with flyers, knocking on the doors in the neighborhood. They're really, really trying to find her. It was a massive search. However, the investigation kind of fizzled out because there was really just no physical evidence. It really seemed like she just vanished out of thin air. Really, like nothing was there.
Oh
They
my
had no idea
God.
what had happened. So, and that's another reason why the Dateline episode about this is called Vanished, because she just, it's like she was never there. They have no idea what happened to her. She has her story featured on America's Most Wanted 6 months later, on August 13th, 2009, to try to get, people's awareness of the story and see if people come up with any information, but they get no new information from this.
And for people that are listening that aren't familiar with Southern California, Escondido is really close to Poway. It's like the
Yeah.
next, it's like one of the next cities over, but it is
Yes.
definitely, I would say, lower income than Poway is.
Right, but she was also not in the downtown area. Really, I mean, it's kind of hard to say because there's really, really nice parts of Escondido too. But I agree with you. In general, it's lower income
Yeah.
than Poway, especially like that high school is not in the same school district, and
District
there's
does
like an
Poway.
obvious difference. The
Yeah.
obvious difference, yeah, for sure. But yes, that's a good point to mention that this is extremely close. Like in the car, it's probably 10 minutes, like that. You
Yeah, so
know,
he's like hunting in the area, he knows.
yes, this is the area he knows very well, and he's comfortable here. So now we're going to go ahead a little bit. Same year, fall 2009, there is an incident of stalking reported at Jessamine Denae Park in Escondido. The person that reported it got partial car plates and to report it to police, but nothing really came of it. Then.
Please don't do anything when you say you have a stalker. It's like, what
Yeah.
do you think they end up doing? Going away? No, this is how
No.
escalation works.
Oh, here we go. So then later in the month, September 24, 2009, there was an attempted abduction in Wildomar slash Lake Elsinore. So now we're kind of going a little bit further from his comfort zone. Lake Elsinore is a little bit further out of San Diego, but it's still close. He knows Southern California so well.
Yeah, because he's moved around so much, and he probably doesn't want to
Yes.
keep going for people from Escondido because then all it's going to be the same police looking at the same case, connecting it all. But if he's going a little bit farther out to Lake Escondido or Lake Elsinore, it's
Yes.
different cops. It might not be the same person. They might not be able to connect it.
Right. It's like far enough away, but close enough away.
Yeah, where he still feels close comfortable.
Exactly. So, yeah. And then literally 6 days later, there's another attempted abduction in the same area. And nothing happens. Then 2 weeks later, October 14th, 2009, a third attempted abduction in the Lake Elsinore area. So that's the third one in the same area within about 3 weeks. Then
why do you keep driving out to Lake Elsinore?
Okay, I think at this point I didn't put a name because I didn't know if it was like worth it or not. But so he had, since he's a registered sex offender, he can only be registered at a certain address. And at this point, like, he had moved with other family members, like I think on his dad's side. And so he was living in, they were living in Lake Elsinore at the time.
Like, so he was living in Lake Elsinore when all this shit was going on.
Like, he had moved there because he was allowed to register himself there. But he doesn't stay there for long. He only stays there for, like, he was really only staying with them. Not so much, like, living, but yeah, living.
Okay.
But yes. So then, fourth, October 28th, attempted kidnapping, abduction, same thing, in Lake Elsinore. So that's the fourth one. Then 6 days later, November 4th, 2009, attempted kidnapping in Ramona. So now he's getting closer to Poway, Rancho Bernardo area from Lake Elsinore. It's about 20 minutes from Rancho Bernardo. And in all of these, the witness or the victim describes a black sedan. So it's the same car for all of these that the victim sees. Now we escalate further. That same year, December 27th, he's back in Rancho Bernardo, and he decides to go to Lake Hodges, and there is an attempted rape and kidnapping in Lake Hodges. And the victim is super shaken up, goes straight to police. She was able to get away by elbowing him in the face and sprinting, and she goes straight to police, and they did a good job, and they get his DNA from a scratch that is in her elbow. There's touch DNA there. It's amazing that they got it. However, nothing happens.
Why? He's in the system.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Are they waiting to test it?
I don't know. I really don't know what happened here. God. Yes.
This is why there shouldn't be a backlog of rape kits or any of that shit.
Because then it makes it so hard for the police to do their work. Yeah. Because
then this person can strike again, too. Like, if you're waiting 6 months to test DNA, what happens in those 6 months if that person is heating up?
This is the real tragedy, and this is, like, the main criticism of
what I'm sure happened here. I'm sure, because they had him. Mm-hmm. They could have gotten him instantly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's a sex offender that tried to abduct and rape multiple people. He would immediately go back to jail. This is so frustrating.
Like, the police really, like, all this stuff was happening and, like, in rapid succession and, like, in a similar area, and no one, and with the same description of the car, and, like, no one thought to put that together either. And, like, even before you had, like, a DNA or a victim that was able to give you, like, DNA and, like, a good description of a face, not just a car, and still nothing happens. Which brings us to February 25th, 2010. So it's about 2 months later. So maybe he thought he was – it's possible that he kind of, like, laid low for those 2 months and then just back at it.
Or it just didn't get reported. Or it was a kid – or it was a girl that wasn't supposed to leave her house, and it was a close call, but she didn't want to tell her parents because she didn't want to get in trouble. Maybe it was a kid that was doing something they weren't supposed to, so they didn't tell their parents or the police.
Yeah,
like, that's true. You don't know if he tried to do it, and he just... because if he was so hot going for it, there's definitely a chance that someone just didn't tell the cops about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Or didn't really know what they were seeing. They could have seen him casing a school or, like, walking suspiciously. But, you know, you rationalize so much of that when you see it out. Like, you could see a car and a guy, like, maybe being creepy, and you're going to be like, oh, like, I didn't see anything.
Like, my first thought is that everyone's creepy, and then I have to talk myself down, like... don't be scared of every single person you see.
But it's better to be like that.
Yeah, for sure. But I always am rationalizing, like, stuff when you don't need to rationalize stuff. Like, if something's weird, it's fucking,
like,
weird.
Trust yourself. Yes. Yeah. Trust your gut. Trust yourself. So, yeah, it's possible that could have happened. I just don't know. But again, it brings us to February 25th, 2010. And there is a reported stalking slash attempted kidnapping at Bernardo Heights Middle School. And the witness reported seeing a black sedan. That same evening of that day, where he did not succeed, he rapes and kills Chelsea King at Lake Hodges in Rancho Bernardo the same day.
What the fuck?
This could have been avoided.
It 100% could have been avoided. And it also sounds like he was probably mad that everyone kept getting away and he just, like, freaked out.
And I also think it was an opportunity thing. Like, the police 100% believe it was a blitz attack. Where he probably came out of this, like, woody, marshy area while she was running and saw her as an opportunity, and it was done quickly. It's so upset. If you look at the map, I'll post it on Instagram, like, where her body ends up being found on the south side of Lake Hodges, they also put a pin on the map of John Gardner's house, and it literally is up the street. Like, up the street. And I think it might be like a hill, but still, like, there is a neighborhood and then the lake is down here and he's like in this neighborhood and then her body is found like right near. It's ridiculous. But anyway, so then he's arrested on the 28th. They're able to match the DNA. They find Chelsea's body on the 2nd, further match the DNA, and the very next day on the 3rd, he has his arraignment for charges of murder and rape of Chelsea King. So the very next day. So what's good about this case is that once they had everything, it went by really fast. And so it wasn't like this drawn out kind of investigation that the parents and families had to go through. It was very quick. And so he was already in court getting arraigned on the 3rd of March, which is one week later.
I'm glad.
Yeah. Quickly. And so while he's being held in custody under the charges of murder of Chelsea, the police ask him about 14-year-old Amber Dubois, and he decides to talk and he gives them information, and the police start searching this wooded area behind the Palo Casino in North County, which is this really wooded, beautiful, natural area near the mountains. And after searching for a couple days, they do end up finding the skeletal remains of Amber Dubois on March 6, 2010, approximately 1 year after she went missing. Thank God, on April 16th, 2010, Gardner pleads guilty.
Good.
I'm so happy that the family did not have to go through him denying everything and this whole trial. He decides that he's going to, so he does a plea deal. So let me tell you what it is. He pleads guilty to the murder and rape of both Dubois and Chelsea King. In exchange, the prosecutors agree not to seek the death penalty because this was an easy death penalty case on their part. But in line with the plea agreement, they're not going to seek the death penalty. He gave police information that with Dubois, he had kidnapped her, threatened her, that he had a knife. That's how he got her into his car. And then he ended up raping and stabbing her and taking her to the mountains and just leaving her there.
Dear God.
Yeah. He also admitted to and pled guilty to the attempted rape of the runner at Lake Hodges in December, the one I told you about that they got DNA from her elbow. And her name is Candace Moncayo, and she has spoken out, and she's just, I can't believe how it feels to be her, but she's so brave and helped the police investigation a lot. As we've talked about already, this case really brought out questions of effectiveness of the system, failures of the system, and a lot of people were asking and claiming that the system really failed these girls. Like, which, I mean, it did. It did, for sure. And thank God, so California state law does end up doing something about it, the governor. So the King family, Chelsea's parents, pushed to see. They were immediate activists on the situation. Like, these, I have met these two parents at their philanthropy event, and they also have spoken at my high school, and I cannot believe the strength that these parents have. And Chelsea's younger brother, like, they, the way that they turned their tragedy into wanting to help others is, like, I can't even comprehend it. Like, they're so incredible. So what they did is that really immediately after having their daughter murdered, they pushed in the California legislature to have a new law passed called Chelsea's Law.
And I've heard of this before.
Yeah. And what it does is that it mandates that the worst child molester offenders face lifetime prison sentences, which is usually just a punishment for murder. But it was saying that child sex offenders would also get lifetime prison sentences. In addition, paroled child molesters are banned from certain public areas like state parks and these things.
Are they ever allowed to live near a school?
No, they're not allowed to live near a school.
I'm confused because I'm starting to freak out now, and I just looked up all these like sexual offenders by my house. I have a ton
Don't
of schools
do that,
by
Lily.
Me. And there's literally like hundreds of sexual offenders within the 5 mile radius I chose.
It might be like a specific thing based on their certain charge.
I'm looking it up and it says like lewd acts with people with children under 14 years of age.
That's not statutory. That's like
it. No, I don't. Like, I'm like confused. Why can they live by the?
Not
school?
Saying statutory is not a bad.
I thought I could be safe because I live by so many schools.
I don't know. That's fucked up. There's no reason why they should be able to live by schools.
This guy lives across from the school. Go to an arranged meeting with a minor with intent to commit a specified sex offense in 2010.
What?
That's not even the worst one.
Maybe people live across
the street from a school.
Maybe we're wrong. I don't know. Maybe we should look that up if they're allowed to. I really think that they're not, because also like what Chelsea's Law did is that like if they're at risk of reoffending, they are not allowed in these public areas like parks and things like this. Like you can't even go to those. Like your freedoms are severely restricted.
They should be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. If you're not going to be in prison, like, I'm sorry, you don't get just to come out and live normal life.
So this is kind of off topic, but my brother was talking about it. There's a violent sex offender that they think has no chance of rehabilitation, that they're moving into Rancho Bernardo on the golf course right now. And everyone is, like, up in arms about it. And I think probably traces back to the Chelsea's Law thing. Apparently the state is paying $14,000 a month to the homeowner to let, like, this guy that they don't think can be rehabilitated live there.
If he can't be rehabilitated, why doesn't he stay in jail?
Yeah, but they can't keep him in jail any longer.
Why?
Because his sentence is over, but they're like, this is the worst of the worst. Like, he's not going to get better.
And I don't know how Rancho Bernardo is going to allow that to happen.
In Rancho Bernardo, people are freaking the fuck out. Like, my brother is so mad.
Obviously. What the fuck? I think with this case, like, I don't know how that's possible, because this literally, this change, when I see this change to the community.
Well, it sounds like they don't really do that much shit to do anything if you're on parole. They probably just know you live there and don't fucking care.
Oh my God. We have to look into this. That's not right. That's fucked up. That's really fucked up.
Yeah, but then it's like the argument, like, where do you put someone like that?
In jail.
Yeah, just stay in there. Stay away from everyone.
Or why don't they put him in a place that's, like, not as populated, like East San Diego, where there's less people or something? Why are you putting them in a very, like, concentrated, like, family area?
But if you put him in East San Diego, there's still kids there.
No, but I'm talking, like, in the desert where maybe there's no kids. Like, put him in a senior place or something.
Does that exist?
Okay, in the Salton Sea area. Do you know where the Salton Sea in, like, east? Okay, so when you're driving to Arizona and, like, you're almost in Arizona, there's that big lake that literally, like, everything dies in because it's so salty. And it's a really cool area. And
we should just banish sex offenders to the Salton Sea.
Yes! But there's, like, these encampments of just seniors that live in trailers. Like, why can't he live there? Kelsey's Law was signed into state law by then Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in September 9th, 2010. And he said, because of Chelsea, California children will be safer. Because of Chelsea, this never has to happen again. So I hope that's true. There are celebrations of life gatherings for each girl at their respective high school, and thousands were in attendance, and they had really, really beautiful ceremonies. On August 2012, a stretch of the 78 highway or freeway was renamed after Amber Dubois, and it was called Amber Dubois Memorial Highway. And then the bridge that stretches over Lake Hodges on the 15 was renamed Chelsea King Memorial Bridge, which is a nice tribute.
That is really nice.
Yeah, and as I was saying, Chelsea King's parents are like such activists, and they really wanted to take their experience and turn it into a positive thing that would help other people. So they started a nonprofit organization called Chelsea's Light Foundation. And what they do is they organize a charity event called Finish Chelsea's Run every single year in San Diego, and thousands of people attend. I've done it, I think, 3 times now.
Yeah, and I remember you going when we were in college. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's a really great event, and I think it's a fundraiser, but it's also an event to raise awareness, and it's also just a beautiful thing to do in her honor. What the money goes to is... Yeah, she loved to run, and so it's great. And it's... what the organization, what the foundation does is, with the money, is fight for more protective legislation in California and nationally. And also it goes to scholarships for students in San Diego, which I think is just a beautiful thing going back into the community. Again, like these parents, it's just beautiful. The whole community was changed by them, obviously in the traumatic way that Chelsea was gone, Amber is gone, but in the mm-hmm. way too that there's been so much positive change from it. So on the website of Chelsea's Light Foundation, Brent Kelly and Tyler King, who are the parents and the son, they say, when our daughter Chelsea went missing, we learned the terrible truth of our loss. We struggled to find air to breathe. Today, we are able to see with such clarity the people that provided us our oxygen during our crisis. It's because of your response to our crisis that we were able to find the strength to choose hope. It's because of your engagement that our state now has the strongest laws in the country, protecting our 9.3 million California children from known violent predators, and we're expanding to other states. It's because of your support that we are able to recognize and honor phenomenal young changemakers with college scholarships. We invite you to join us and thank you for continuing to help Chelsea's light shine, which I thought that was just beautiful. Tribute to her, really, and it really shows like the actions they've made. I cannot believe that they've been able to turn such a tragic moment into something so beautiful. And that is the story of Chelsea King and Amber Dubois and Candace Moncayo too, and all of the other innocent victims that were harassed by this horrible, horrible man. I'm so fucking happy that he's rotting in prison right now.
Yeah, I hope he has a terrible prison life.
But yeah, that's the story, and it truly has like changed the course of my life, changed the neighborhood that I grew up, and we're always, always going to remember you, Chelsea and Amber. We'll always remember you. That's all.
Yeah, thank you so much, Carmen. I mean, it's definitely an important story to tell, even if you think you're in a safe neighborhood. Okay, well, that was an amazing story told by the wonderful Carmen.
Aw, thank you, Lil. Thank you guys for listening. Mm-hmm. It was a pleasure to tell this story. I really hope that it resonates with you in some way that makes you want to look at your life and happiness. And I don't know, like live Chelsea's model and find a light and everything like that. So next episode, Lily is going to tell us, and you can find us on Apple, Spotify podcast and plenty of other platforms, our Instagram, our Patreon, everything is Murder Show Pod. You can email us at murdershowpod@gmail.com. Let us know if you want to follow or if you want us to cover any specific cases, and we'll definitely do that.
Yeah. Let us know.
Let us know. Without further ado, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.